Welcome back. This is episode 197 of Ladies with Gumption, episode titled Glass Houses and Thrown Stones. We are the Ladies with Gumption. We recap DC TV in a flash. My name is Jessica, and I'm here with
Tatiana
and May.
And you can find us on Twitter at on Twitter at DC TV Gumption, where you can follow along with our live tweets. You can send us feedback at our email, ladiesofbegumption.gmail.com, or you can send us on Tumblr. I promise you, if you send them in, I will look at them and answer them. Although we have been a little bit slow on that front.
We have been lax lately.
We have been lax, but we'll get back in it, I promise. Hopefully you're listening to us on one of the many, you know, avenues. If one is down, you can find us on another one. So Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Spotify, Stitcher, on the Podomatic site, or you could also find us on Patreon. If you're a patron, thank you very much for your patronage. It helps us to handle the subscription costs of hosting the site. And in return for that $10 a month, you get these episodes 24 hours in advance, along with exclusive other content episodes from series, HBO Max premium shows. We have DC Titans and Doom Patrol coming back around. We recently did Umbrella Academy season 3. We've done other Netflix shows, other Marvel Universe shows, Star Wars. So it's a wider cultural pop culture net of shows that you can listen to as well. And you can find us at patreon.com/gcctvgumption. In the news, lots of stuff that's happened since the last time we recorded the first 4 episodes of Stargirl. Namely being going down the roll call. I have no words. My words are just like ridiculous this week, whatever. Anyways, premiere dates, like I mentioned before, Titans season 4 premieres November the 3rd. So it's coming up within like a week or two. And then Doom Patrol comes out on December the 8th. We have the DC Titans season 4 trailer. A lot of things going on. This season they're going to be introducing Brother Blood, Jinx. There's another character whose name I can't remember, but she's in there too, in that group. Have you guys seen the trailer, and what did you think of the trailer?
I truly, truly have not. I have no thoughts. Other than,
Let me elaborate on some of the that you can see. It looks like Gar is going to have a bit of a storyline. We know in season 3.
Finally.
We know in season 3 that he finally was able to change into something other than Tiger. And so that's going to be expanded on. He gets his costume. We also have Lex Luthor makes his DC Titans debut, and he is going to be involved in the Brother Blood storyline. And because we have Lex Luthor, that's also going to lead to some conflict for Connor, being that Connor is, you know, Lex is one half of his father's. So there leads to a lot of like morality issues there. You have Tim Drake, new to the team. There's a potential, one of his potential love interests, I don't know if the actor's name is Rudy or the character he's playing's name is Rudy. I don't know. But there's a potential boyfriend for Tim in the season. So that is in there as well. We know that also there is the resurgence of Dick Corey, that relationship. So a lot of different things like that to look forward to. Anything of that seem of interest to you?
Dick Corey.
I mean, yeah, I knew that Dick Corey was on its way, and I'm very excited for that. That's about it. I mean, no, I'm definitely excited for Tim to get a boyfriend. I think that's exciting and well-deserved.
Same, and I feel like I'm excited for Gar to even have a storyline, because I feel like he's really been shortchanged the last several seasons.
Exactly. So far.
So hopefully they actually give it to him, and it's actually something that doesn't, you know, that lasts more than one episode. So,
and I also like that. I mean, this is Tim's first kind of introduction. So I think one of the trailers showed Tim and Nightwing, and they had to like fight bad guys. It was mainly like Dick fighting the bad guys, and Tim be like, ah. So I think that that's interesting, and it looks like there are no extra players. I don't remember seeing Jason in this trailer, but I could have just blocked him out visually.
He's tired of death.
At least from the glimpses of the trailer, which, you know, looks can be deceiving. It looks like it is honing in on them as a core, as a team, and the different characters within that core team, and not guest stars. I'll say it that way. So that's interesting. Doom Patrol Season 4 trailer. Did you see that one?
No, I'm so behind.
Oh my god. So, in this trailer, I think it's hard to describe Doom Patrol trailer because it kind of does its own thing. But I think at the end of Season 3, we had the team, they were time traveling again. And so where this picks up in Season 4, it is like an underground, you know, government style bunker, and the voiceover or the character is talking about how, you know, these are going to be really huge weapons that we can use and control or something like that. And you look into the viewing window of what it is, and it's the Butts, and they're doing like this musical number, like cheese my shifty. It's like hilarious. It's like a whole like musical dance number, and it's funny. But there's, you know, I think Cyborg is still not Cyborg. Like he, you know, he went through Season 3 of taking out all of his tech, and he is still that way in Season 4. So that's just how Vic's looking right now. We know that Rita is going to take over a leadership role on the team. So that is something to look forward to. And I think, I mean, there's not a lot that you can really kind of pull together in terms of storyline. We do also know that another new character being introduced, Sinhil Rama, is going to appear in Doom Patrol as Mr. 104, who is officially described as a charming and mysterious man of many elements. So we also have that new character introduction.
Interesting.
There we go. Other HBO Max shows, Harley Quinn is getting a Valentine's Day episode in 2023. So that's going to be a special standalone episode for them. Peacemaker Season 1 is going to come to Blu-ray on November 22nd. So if you need Black Friday, early Christmas gifts for people, and they like Peacemaker, that's when it goes on sale, just so you know. Also, interestingly enough, the creator of the Watchmen series apparently just hates all media of his shows, of his comic.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, including the HBO acclaimed series starring Regina King. And it was kind of weird because I think in the purest of sense, because it's not that he didn't specifically didn't like Regina King's Watchmen. He didn't like any of the others either. So I think in the purest comic book sense, he doesn't like when people take creative license to his stuff.
Right.
Stuff that he didn't write.
Does he not control the creative license? Does he not control like the ability to give it to people or not?
I have no idea. But he just, I would assume if he had control, then we wouldn't have any of that stuff.
Right.
Because he was not about it and trying to watch something, how other people interpret it. Because I think he was like, you know, now when people think of Watchmen, they're going to think of Regina King's Watchmen, and this is what the comic is about, which is not what the comic is about, or the Watchmen movie was like, this is what it is, and that's not what it is. So, yeah, that it was an interesting read. I think Variety had the article, if you guys want
what
to
is interesting search and is, look for it. Like, I don't know how it works in the comics world, maybe because if they write or do the art for it, that they don't actually, like, own any of the copyright to it, because
I feel like that's, you know, for like the same thing with creating new characters, like the Killer Frost issue. Wasn't that like a thing where, you know, if you create a version of established character, then you don't get the same rights, or I don't know, something.
I know that is like an issue that has happened with a lot of artists. I just would have thought that someone like Alan Moore would not have that issue, but hey. It could be.
He was not here for it.
And that
he hasn't watched it, and he doesn't plan on watching it, because he's like, it'll just be torture to watch something that has the name of my creation. That's not my creation.
I just read it, by the way.
Yeah.
In 2017, Moore and Gibbons' contract with DC for Watchmen included a reversion clause that would return ownership to the creators if the characters were not used for a year. And DC paid them a substantial amount of money to retain the rights until that time. So DC keeps using it so that the rights will not revert to them.
Interesting.
There you go.
Very shady. Speaking of shady, Walter Hamada is out as the DC Films boss. So there.
Ray Fisher probably threw a party.
Ray Fisher 1, Walter Hamada 0.
Yes. And it's interesting because he apparently left quietly and he didn't retain a producer title, which is usually what they give people who are like have been working with them for a long time,
right,
or the head of the studio or whatever, and they're just like, we'll give you this, but you gotta go. He didn't get any of that either, so that's really interesting because I feel like they're overhauling everything, so they don't want any of the old guard around. But there is a new guy, I don't remember his first name, something DeLuca, and yeah, he's apparently like overseeing a lot of the DC film stuff, even though he's not in like the official head of DC Films position, which I thought was interesting because he was the one who was like agreeing to certain things that were happening that Hamada was like, no, we're not doing that.
Interesting. I went to Ray Fisher's Twitter, and when the whole Walter Hamada news dropped, he's like, not sure why I'm trending, but this would be a good time to mention. Walter Hamada still owes an apology to the participants of the Justice League investigation. Had he not attempted to cover for Geoff Johns' toxic and discriminatory behavior, we wouldn't be here now. So that is what he had to say on that. In non-DC related news... Oh, wait, still in DC. Wonder Woman 3 script is in the works. And The Flash sequel, they're doing a sequel to this movie? The Flash sequel has reportedly been written by Aquaman writer David Leslie and David Leslie Johnson McGoldrick.
Yes.
And that's not who wrote the original one, right?
Right, he was the one who wrote Aquaman.
So yes, that's interesting.
Yeah.
Why would they already have a Flash sequel written and by not the person that...
I don't know, but the article is saying that they have it written in case the movie does well.
Interesting.
But I don't know. They didn't say anything about what the plans are for Ezra Miller continuing the role. Because I think another report was basically like, they're not going to continue regardless of what happens.
Or they could somehow put in like an end scene in The Flash to reboot it for Wally. And then that would work.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Also, before we switch out of DC, there's a lot of news, so sorry, guys. But you guys saw Black Adam.
We sure did.
Pretty soon. What are your overall thoughts about Black Adam?
Genuinely, I was bored. I went in, I was like, I have low expectations, but at least it should be fun. But I was not having fun. It was just okay. And by okay, I mean, like, I managed to only sleep for a couple of minutes.
Oh, my God.
I woke myself up and continued on. I did enjoy, I loved the dynamic between Dr. Fate and Hawkman. I thought they were great. Basically, I can't remember his name because I'm going to call him Ant-Man, but Adam Smasher. Adam Smasher is basically Ant-Man. Obviously, Paul Rudd is better at being Ant-Man than Noah Centineo is, but his dynamic with Quintessa Swindle was also cute. So yeah, basically JSA stuff, cute. Sarah Shockey, gorgeous, amazing, show-stopping. But the story was just kind of like, okay, oh my God, he's not a hero. He kills people sometimes. And then JSA is like, don't kill people. And Black Adam's like, but I must. And then suddenly he's like, you know what? You're right. I should not. But then he's like, actually, no. I still will. Okay, thank you for sharing. So yes, that was my feelings. May.
I liked it better than I thought I was going to like it. I feel like it was passable, you know, it was like entertaining, and maybe I was more entertained because I was with people who were very into it, and it was like great to see their reactions, because I have a friend who's like, you know, a big comic book fan. Every time somebody mentioned, like, you know, Eternium or some like really comic booky thing, you know, that I have not necessarily read, he's like, oh my god. So it was very entertaining to watch with him. But I also thought that, like, there's like way too much action, where to the point where they didn't really let the characters breathe too much. Like,
well, that's where The Rock lives, in action stuff.
Yeah. But at the same time, I could have used a few more heart to hearts, or just other types of scenes where they develop the characters more. I feel like Hawkman and Dr. Fate were great together. I didn't see why Cyclone and Adam Smasher were really there, to be honest. It was interesting because the film too is set in a new country in the DCEU. To, you know, in the comics, it's called it's a fictional country, but it's supposed to be set like somewhere in the Egyptian peninsula. And
what's the name of the country?
Khandaq.
Okay.
And I think the thing that bothered me the most was the use of yellow filter, the fact that, like, all of the Khandaq characters had some, I guess, what was supposed to be some Middle Eastern accent, even though a lot of them are actually Middle Eastern American. So that was, like, put me off, just because, like, Black Adam is, like, the people's champion, and he has, like, an American accent. I always feel like that sort of others everybody else. Like, in the background, you could see, I was like, is that Arabic? And then you get closer, and I'm like, it's gibberish, but it looks like Arabic from afar. And I understand it's a fictional country, but, like, certain things, and the details, like, bothersome. But otherwise, it was, like, a serviceable film, you know, it wasn't great.
Will the general population be like, yeah.
Yeah, I think so, because it's, like, it's on par with many of the other forgettable superhero movies that you'll watch, you might be entertained by for like 2 hours, and then you're gonna go home and probably not remember much afterwards, you know.
Okay, so there you go. Go out and see it and tell us what you think. We'll probably cover it because they have watched it, and I will probably watch it as well. And non-DC related news very quickly, The Boys season 4 adds 2 new characters, Sage and Firecracker. Which I feel like we talked about before, but, you know, recently they showed their costume reveals, so that will be interesting to see how that develops and how that story will play out. But getting into the theme of this podcast, we did episodes 1 through 4 of Stargirl last time, so this time we are getting caught up on episodes 5 through 7. May is going to take us on this journey, and we are going to give our joy, no joy, feedback. I believe Sonia had feedback for the episode, so we'll mention her feedback in there as well, and then we'll end with a Lady with Gumption of the Week.
I will attempt to take you through this. Great thanks to Tati for having filled out some of the synopsis beforehand, so bless you. Super helpful. Side A is called Sins of the Father. In episode 5, called The Thief, Yolanda digs deeper into what Cindy's up to because she is prime suspect number 1, as the JSA grow apart because Courtney decides to date Cameron, and they are not really on board with that because they know who his father is, they know what she did, and that whole thing is just not.
Why it's called Sins of the Father?
Indeed.
They don't know that yet.
Not That's true. Time. That's true. But they just...
They just know Courtney is MIA.
They know Courtney's MIA, correct. Yes, I'm jumping ahead. And then Beth is sort of stuck because her parents are like, yay, you're a superhero. And then she's like, no, this is dangerous, and I need you to kind of keep away. And she doesn't really know what to do because they continue calling her and being excited about the whole superhero thing. And she is kind of getting annoyed at them in general. And then the mystery deepens with Dragon King potentially being the one behind the gambler's death and continuing to spy on everybody. And then there's a lot of Starman in this episode as well, in which he kind of loses his temper when they're going down into the tunnels and still trying to, like, figure himself out, but he is around. What else happens in this episode? I think that's the gist of it. So what sparked Joy?
Well, I did like how they depicted the tension that's growing within the JSA. I thought that it was all, like, realistically done, and sometimes, you know, someone might be distracted by a new relationship like Courtney is, but also the fact that she's insecure about her role because of Sylvester's presence, and that causes her to distance herself even further, which is, like, a vicious cycle, because she's distancing herself further, causing the group to lean more on Sylvester, causing her to distance herself even further, etc. So that was good. Also, I like how the mystery, you know, zigs and zags, like, we open with, like, okay, well, I guess Cindy did it, but then it's like, no, I didn't, oh my god. So, you know, at least they're doing a good job of keeping up the suspense, although I will say, I guess it's a no Joy, but, like, right now, I'm like, if it's not Cindy, I have no other leads. But hey, good job with making Cindy look super guilty, I guess. I also really loved the conversation between Sylvester and Barbara about, like, parenting, about leadership, and him not feeling like he was up to the task. Asking her about how she handled, you know, like, Pat bringing in Mike. Barbara talking about Mike being her son. It was a very sweet relationship, and Amy Smart really sold it, considering we almost never see Barbara and Mike interact. So great. And also, they both, like, complimented Pat and how great he is, as Pat deserves. Haven't seen as much of him being the greatest this season, but he still is. And then, of course, I loved Sylvester trying to bond with Mike and being like, don't worry, you're a hero in your own way. Also, this is the first episode where I really noticed how different Mike looks. And I was like, is that the same actor? But I guess it's just puberty. And so that combined with him and Keem trying to convince Cindy to join the Young All-Stars, which they should definitely abbreviate to YAS, was super, super cute. And how they were, like, arguing with her, like, the name was just, like, not doing it for her or whatever. Finally, in this episode, I thought Beth keeping her parents out of the hearing was sweet. Like, I was like, they had that nice concern where it seemed like they understood what she was saying. And whatever, I like that little reversal in this episode. And as it goes on, not so much.
I will give you, we'll give you back a little bit of credit, May, because they, in this episode, they did have a situation where Cameron was, like, lingering at the JSA table, and Courtney wasn't telling him to go away, and then they're like, go away, like, stop talking to him. So they were already, like, Courtney was already aware up front that there was some tension regarding her getting close to Cameron. So
that's right. And that's when Sebastian, Yolanda was like, his dad, and Courtney was like, he's not his dad, and neither am I. I was like, all right, woo.
It was, yeah, it was very dramatic. I still don't understand, like, I feel like I missed what Rick's problem is with Cameron specifically.
He's just a psycho.
They had that showdown with the teacher, right? But we don't really know what they're
doing. Well, I still don't know, like, what his problem
yeah,
is.
Yeah, maybe just because he's just, of Icicle? I don't know.
Yeah, I think that's probably what it is. I think that Rick and Yolanda are on a thing with
Rick
that.
Rick hates it when people talk back to his favorite teacher. That's what it is.
I guess so. But my joys, I think I really liked this episode for Cindy. I liked it opening up with what actually happened. Because you have the suspicion of, could it be her? And I feel like this kind of exonerates her, you know, a lot about her being at the crime scene and how she got to the laptop, how she found, like, the gun and everything like that. And then you kind of open it up, you know, well, why didn't she tell the team about the laptop? Why is she being secretive about that? And kind of discover that, you know, really the files that she's interested in looking at, is there anything in there that would help her cure her condition? I just feel, and then the scene with her kind of, the whole scene with Mike and Jakeem and the bullies, first of all, before Cindy gets there, is hilarious because Mike is like, this is a good opportunity to use Thunderbolt to get these bullies to leave us alone and to, like, be nice to us or whatever. And that turns into them, like, instead of saying, give me your money, like, please give me your money or I will have to punch you in the face, like, very politely bullying them, which I thought was hilarious. But Cindy kind of, like, sticking up for them, it again kind of shows this good path that she's on, and them being kind of, like, starstruck or having a crush on her and wanting her to join the All-Stars. It was really cute because she's been taking kind of the brunt of rookie hazing in the JSA for a couple of episodes now, and these Mike and Jakeem really see the potential that she has, and see her as an asset. So that was something that was really cute. And even though she turned him down because she didn't want to be the JV team, I think it still really flattered her that finally someone sees what I can do and what I can bring to the table. So I thought that was really nice. I agree about Barbara and Sylvester's heart-to-heart. I thought it was really sweet, a really sweet adult conversation about stepping in. What's that saying? Like, not being not like the father or something, but I'm the father that stepped up. You know, I'm the dad that stepped up. That kind of conversation about kind of like stepping into that role where you have, you know, the younger generation are looking at you in that kind of mentorship kind of role, and how, you know, Barbara, because we didn't really get, you know, this show is mostly Pat and Courtney's relationship primarily. But Barbara and Mike have built like a really nice secondary parent child relationship as well. So it's nice to see her vocalize that. And then with Sylvester giving Mike kind of the pep talk that Mike needed to really go forward with Young All-Stars and boost his own investigation. So I thought that was cool. What else did I like? I thought it was really kind of like sweetly dramatic how Beth was breaking up with her parents at the end of the episode. So I thought that was cute. The Crocs continue to be like a nice comic relief. Their double date with Pat and Barb talking about, I think it's at this, they also are doing like work on their own side and kind of helping to fill in the pieces, even though they're not on the team. It's nice to kind of get like the whole community involved in a sense. So that was cool. Also with Cindy and Courtney, I thought they had some really good scenes because Courtney can't talk to the JSA about her feelings about Cameron. Cindy is someone that she can actually open up to with her actual feelings and kind of get like honest, unclouded advice about Cameron. I think this was another, you know, good side of Cindy, how Cindy gave her support, but also a little bit of caution. So she didn't like shut Courtney down automatically, but she just like, be careful. And she followed that up with Cameron specifically to kind of test him, which he failed, but test him to see, cause she doesn't want Courtney to be hurt. So I feel like there's a lot of good things going on for Cindy in this episode. Show us the audience. Her true character and kind of exonerate her to us as a suspect, which, you know, we didn't think she actually killed him anyway, but, you know, it's showing that and showing her true character in contrast to how people are viewing her. And then I think it's on a nice full foil to Cameron, because we still don't really know. They're kind of the same in that they're children of the ISA. Yeah. But, you know, we see all the good in Cindy. We are still in the dark about how we feel about Cameron and whether or not he should really have the same grace from Courtney that Cindy does. So that is all really interesting.
Yes. It was really nice to actually see too Cindy know something about Cameron that Courtney might not, or even the audience might not, because, you know, so far he's sort of been shown as this like tortured artist who is grieving his father and he's going through so much. And he's this kind, sweet person. But then Cindy's like, well, you kind of have a dark side because you couldn't really control your temper back in the day. And so you had to be sent away to like
third grade.
So it just seems, I'm like, this is interesting information. So I like that we got that. So it doesn't seem like he's this like one dimensional, you know, nice guy or whatever. There is something more to him that we are not privy to yet. And I really like the fact that Cindy continues to grow as a character in general. Like you said, Jess, you know, her being courted by Jakeem and Mike.
I like that they say we have a preposition for you instead of proposition.
She's like, that's not right, but I understand what you're saying. That was really cute. And sort of how she goes along with it, but she also wants to, like, roll her eyes. But it's, like, a eye roll that she also wants to smile because it's, like, oh, so sweet that they're thinking of her or whatever. So that was really nice. And I feel like she really needs that because she's always being told that she's not a good person. No matter how hard she tries, like, she can't change. But then these guys are just like, you're awesome. We want you with us. And that's nice for her. The Crocs, I think, was it this episode where they kind of like slide into the booth and are like, yes, you know, being good has done wonders for us in the bedroom.
They're impromptu.
It was hilarious. Yeah, they're just so funny. And even like, what it was she saying to Barbara about like trying to get the truth out of other people? And she's like, yeah, we only threw them from the roof once. And then Barbara's like, her expression, she's like, oh, is that like, that's not good. Okay, noted. You know, that's not how to be a good person. So they are really hilarious. I just continue to enjoy, like, Cameron and Courtney do have nice chemistry together. Like, I don't hate them together. And I feel like even though Courtney is also trying to help him because she feels guilty about what happened to his dad, I do feel like because she sees the best in people, she wants to see the best in Cameron. And that's why, like, she just wants to help him out. What else? I just like the fact that we no longer, I mean, side eye to anybody who did suspect Cindy because we knew that was not her, but I'm glad this episode sort of solidified the fact that it's not her and that she's going through a lot. And yeah, just Cindy all day. I love her. I think that's about it. Oh yes. Barbara and Sylvester's chat, because I do feel like, agree with you, Tati, about Amy Smart really bringing the emotion to that scene, because like when she got teary, I was like, oh, her relationship with Mike is so sweet. Even though we actually haven't seen them hang out in a while, but it's nice to be reminded that the Dugan Whitmore household is very loving, truly cares about each other, and, you know, are like the parents of the year, basically. So that's all really sweet. What did not spark joy?
Well, I thought they, like, even though, yes, as we've all said, the episode shows that it is not actually Cindy, but, like, I really wish they'd go down another avenue at this point, because, like, they keep hitting the Cindy angle, mm-hmm. and since we already know it's not her, I would like the rest of them to get another clue. Would be nice. Also, it was the beginning of, let's hack into things, and the hacking is super easy, even though it's also just, like, not hacking, so whatever. Like, the whole what is hacking thing that superhero shows always do is very annoying. I'm basically the Cameron stan among us, even though I'm not a Cameron stan, but I feel like everyone is just really rude to Cameron all the time for no reason.
This is nothing for two seasons.
Exactly, because he's done nothing for two seasons, but they're still like, Rick, you need to tone it down at the table. What are you doing? Why can't Cameron and Courtney just say hello? And then also Cindy, I was like, Cindy, you literally almost killed half of the cast last season. What are you talking about? Why are you, like, in third grade? You one time could not control your powers, and that is why you cannot be with Courtney. Meanwhile, me should be Courtney's new best friend and part of the JSA. Very. I'm like, what?
I feel like they all have not even shady morals, but their morals stop when it comes to Courtney. They're like, yes, now, like, I have morals, and I will try to.
I feel like whatever she was referencing, maybe it hits, because I feel like he didn't know that he had power. So I feel like whatever happened in third grade, they suppressed it, mm-hmm. and he doesn't remember it, but other people do.
Mm-hmm.
So
probably. But yeah, so I was like, all right, guys, can you guys just leave him alone? You're going to make him go from boring to bad. And I kind of lost
that. That's too much of a whiplash for you.
Exactly. Also, I'm sorry, Rick, I just don't care about his powering back up. The inhibitor storyline is just so slow. Like, I think he got his powers back this episode, or he, like, broke the inhibitor or whatever he did. And then it did not go anywhere. We don't see anything come of it in the next episode. I think maybe we do in episode 7? I don't remember. Yeah, but I was like, okay, and now what? Are we going to talk about it? Are we going to do anything about it? Anyway, that's all.
Me? I'm going to go the opposite way. Fucking Cameron! Like, it's technically not his fault, and this whole situation is not his fault, and, like, Cindy's, like, a good person. I totally agree with you that she wants to see the good in people, and aside from romantic feelings, feels guilt about how things went down with his dad, and doesn't want to see him go down the same path if he has, like, the wrong influences. So she's doing her best to kind of help him out. But the stress that it's putting on the JSA and the fact that he seems like almost entitled to Courtney, when we've seen nothing of really any kind of like build aside from sporadic episodes where Courtney tries to connect with him and then has to do JSA stuff and then he sulks. I even think in this episode, initially, when it was either in this episode or the previous episode, something was going on with him and he was like snapping at her for no reason. It's like, oh, like you abandoned me? Like, sir, come on. Like, y'all aren't that close for you to have these kind of like temper tantrums or whatever. And while I do think they do have like good chemistry together, they had a nice juicy kiss. I think they got the 360 treatment, so that's how you know it's real. At the beginning of the episode, and like the Romeo Juliet-esque plot of their relationship is interesting. Like, you know, there's a lot of like interesting story there, but I just like the stress of the team dynamic and the fact that she is, you know, so focused on trying to help Cameron that she's dropping the ball with the leadership of the team. She was doing a great job in the beginning of the season in her leadership role, keeping all of these different personalities together. And now that Cameron is in the picture with his powers, he's like hoarding her full attention, which is exacerbating the cracks that were forming within the JSA in the beginning. So that is not joyful for me. And I also just feel like he went from being wallpaper to being the center of Courtney's relationships. And maybe if he was not wallpaper initially, I would enjoy the angst more, but he wasn't, and I don't. And I thought while it was kind of like bittersweet, Beth breaking up with her parents, Batman style, I still don't think that it's necessary for her to break up with her parents like this. So that is also a little bit on my no joy list. But yeah.
Yeah. This is not necessarily a dislike or a non-joy, because as much as I do enjoy Jakeem and Mike kind of teaming up and trying to make their own team, I don't understand why they don't just like try to team up with the rest of the JSA, I guess, because
That's like the thing is that they don't feel like the JSA is treating them like full members. So they have to themselves by finding Dragon.
And that makes me sad. And also,
it was mostly Mike's issue.
Yes, absolutely. Jakeem's like along for the ride. He's like, I don't know what's happening, but yes, I will come. I do feel like Courtney, it's really interesting because she was hyper focused on the JSA before, and now she does have something else going on in Courtney world, which is nice. But at the same time, I feel like the show is like struggling to balance the two things, because it's like saying like she can only really focus on one thing at any given point. And I feel like personally, I would like her to focus more on her friendships and not on Cameron. She can hang out with Cameron, but I also feel like there's been a little bit of a gap in terms of more friend scenes with the JSA. Like, for example, like Rick's, the only thing he's got going on is little hourglass thing. And it's like, we don't get many scenes with all of them or one-on-ones with Courtney, but now Courtney's
different
like,
dynamics.
Dynamics. Yeah. So it's like hyper-focused now on Courtney and Cameron. And it's like, okay, fine. I get where the story's going, but just want a little bit more of the other JSA stuff would be really nice. And I felt bad for Beth, you know, in general. Like, I don't like that she broke up with her parents, or like the implication that she has to, you know, protect them and keep them away and keep them at a distance, especially now that they've swapped places and they're actually really invested in her life. So that was frustrating to watch. Yeah, I think that's it. Did we have any feedback for this episode?
Sonia's feedback for episode 5. Courtney and Cameron is so cute with him walking her home because he didn't want the night to end. Aw. Also, Courtney's cover being Wikipedia for how she was going to research his powers. also, thinking back to season 1 and the fact that she found out a lot about Starman and Wildcat through Wikipedia makes it even funnier. Sylvester literally yelling at the photo of the ISA, like, someone get this man in therapy. And then Yolanda and Rick with the glance to each other, like, is this dude okay? Love Barbara and Sylvester's talk about being a parent and how she never thought she'd had another kid other than Courtney. And I gotta admit, I teared up when she called Mike her son, because while we've seen a lot of Pat as Courtney's dad, we haven't seen a lot of Mike as Barbara's son. And it was nice to see that. Love the Easter egg to Dr. Fate and Wotan when Sylvester's talking with Mike, and to the Crimson Avenger when he's talking with Courtney. The show is really good at all those tiny Easter eggs that aren't super in your face but are there for people who read the comics. Like how Mike brought up the whole icicle thing was just an accident, but when Sylvester brought up Eclipso, when did Mike go up against him? Am I forgetting something from last season? What did he do with Eclipso?
I remember nodding along and being like, yes, that is correct when it happened, but I don't remember what happened.
Yeah.
Oh, wait, didn't he run over Eclipso or something? Didn't that happen?
No, that was Iceman, right?
Oh. He ran over Icicle. He didn't run over Eclipso, but I feel like that was like a family effort. So I feel like he was like an integral part of that, which is what I was getting at.
I guess that makes sense.
I get that Courtney's happy with Cameron or whatever, but she's not invested in being Stargirl or being part of the JSA at all. It's like she's not capable of putting similar amounts of attention on more than one thing at a time. She's like either 1,000% Stargirl and nothing else, or now she's 1,000% Cameron's girlfriend and nothing else. It's getting on my nerves how nonchalant she is about everything Stargirl and JSA related, with her literal lives at stake. But to be fair, Sonya, they did tell her that you need work-life balance. She has been all work for like two seasons, and now she's trying to find the balance, and she's got to go back over to the other extreme before she finds a happy medium. So there you go. Let's see. Sylvester calling Beth in the middle of the school day, that was funny, while she was taking a test and she still answered. I'm using MapQuest. I hope it still works. Haha. poor Mike and Jacqueline getting rejected by Cindy. At least she was nice about it. Also Thunderbolt wanting to know how it went since he couldn't hear it. Crazy to find out that Cameron was institutionalized when he was younger due to his anger issues. Yikes. Although I feel like Beth's parents are coming on way too strong, the fact that they're trying to compare them to Sylvester's sister, who was also Brainwave's wife and Henry's mom, is weird because the two situations couldn't be more different. It's closer to Barbara finding out, and she's allowed to know and be a part of everything. I think they just need to tone it down a bit, but they should be allowed to help out. That's excerpts from Sonya's episode 5 feedback. I'll post the full one on Tumblr this weekend.
Beautiful. I forgot to say that there was too much. One of my dislikes was the fact that there was too much Sylvester this episode. And I forgot about it because he is not in the other episodes as much, which just promised me when I was like, Sylvester. moving on to episode 6, The Betrayal. Yolanda has a focus to catch Cindy in the act and make sure that she is right and prove to the JSA that, you know, Cindy is not a great person. Courtney's relationship with Cameron is called into question after everybody finds out about it, and Barbara and Pat actually go to his grandparents' house to pay them a kindly visit to check in, and it's like the most awkward parents meeting grandparents ever. And then the JSA split even more because they don't like the fact that Courtney is dating Cameron because he is Icicle's son. What else happened in this episode? That's like the main gist of it. And then there's, of course, Cindy and Yolanda kind of duking it out finally, because I feel like there's been so much tension over the course of several episodes, and they both want to be Courtney's BFFs, and finally they get to like just fight each other over it. What sparked joy?
I don't know if this is like joy. It's not joy in that it made me happy, but I guess joy in the sense of like, this was a hugely intense episode, and we know, like you said, it's been building for the couple of episodes, and this is where it all kind of explodes, and we see the kind of dark spiral that Yolanda is going down, and it's unintentionally assisted, I think, by Sylvester saying like, look, you need, you know, Courtney is sunshine, she wants to believe the best in people, but she needs someone like you who's gonna, you know, be like, no, actually, the like more realistic person, skeptic in the group, she needs that. So Yolanda is like leaning into that super hard. And I liked, I think it's one of the earlier scenes where I think she stole the laptop at the end of episode 5. And so now she's going to her confessional, and she's telling the priest that, you know, bless me, Father, for I have sinned. And she's talking about stealing this laptop and that some people are just not good people. And I like that the priest is like, you know, be careful. Do not judge lest you be judged kind of thing, because Yolanda is full on sinners. They should go to hell. Fire and brimstone Yolanda. So I like that the priest is a little bit unnerved by the kind of the path that she's going down. She is, because she is getting like a little judgy. So I like that there's that kind of like warning sign, and that she goes to the JSA, the team, to kind of talk about like, what do we do with this? And I thought Sylvester had like a good plan. Like, it really feels like in the absence of Courtney, he is stepping in, and it's since that conversation with Barbara, he seems a lot more calmer in how he deals with the JSA. And telling them, you know, we have the laptop, but let's not rush to judgment. Because if this was him a couple of episodes ago, this fight would have happened much sooner with them and Cindy. So I like the fact that he kind of like, let's have a plan, and that he's including Courtney, even though she's not there. He is, I think throughout the episode, he's like, where's Courtney? We got to talk, we got to update. And even though she's not there, it's something like, it's active that I feel better that he's not going to have that situation where he takes the staff from her. I feel like he really is trying to like mentor her and the rest of the team. So I like the plan that they came up with to put the laptop back, like get what you need from it, but also put it back before she recognizes that it's gone. I thought that was a good plan. I knew that it wasn't going to work in the end. And the choreography, I hated everything emotionally about that scene. But visually, the choreography for the fight and the release of all of the tension between Yolanda and Cindy was great. It was fantastic. I thought it was a really good choreographed fight scene. And then you get down, and then Rick's punk ass has to do a 2-on-1. Like, come on. This is a girl fight. Let's keep it between the girls. Okay?
It's a cat fight.
It's a cat fight. So I liked that. I like that Courtney, finally, when they do get a hold of her, I like how she stopped the fight. It was very authoritative when she kind of broke everything up. And that even though Yolanda and Rick have already judged and sentenced Sydney to death, that faced with this new information of Cindy's betrayal, so to speak, of withholding information, Courtney still doesn't rush to judge Cindy. She still wants to help Cindy. She still wants to hear Cindy's side of the story. I like that we finally get Cindy's side of the story and her earnesty and not really understanding what's happening to her and just wanting to have someone to help her. But I totally understand why at that moment, you know, first of all, she blows up Courtney's spot with Cameron. And then also it's just like, she appears to be super done with everybody. And I feel like she has a right to be, because she's been through a lot. And even there's no reasoning to Yolanda's too far gone. So that whole storyline and fight was a whole lot of a release of emotions. And I thought it was well written and acted out. Other smaller moments, when Beth is like debating on whether she did the right thing on blocking her parents, and she's like, would you tell your parents? And I was like, hell no. Like, the way she responded was hilarious to me. But then she followed it up with, you know, but her parents suck and thus do not. So I like that there is that kind of opening for reconciliation with Beth and her parents. I like that Beth is she's the one that's kind of like sticking to the storyline. I feel like Rick and Yolanda have gone off on one deep end. Courtney is MIA on the other. Beth is really the one that's kind of keeping the team together in a sense of solving the mystery with all of the files in the laptop. And I like that it ended with her coming up with this big discovery of the cameras in different areas and how she was able to go to the Whitmore Dugan's house and turn on the juicer or whatever so she could show them. So now we have like a little bit of more of a forward movement. We've established that it's not Cindy. And now we have this new clue. This is a clue that Tati's been waiting on. On where do we go from here? So I thought all of that was really good. The Dugan Whitmores versus the McKents was very funny and awkward. The grandma is just not having it. Like, she and Barbara were having like an intense like mental battle off between the two of them, because I feel like Pat and the grandpa were just kind of like, let's be calm here. Let's be sensible adults.
The grandma looks like she's about to murder someone at any
time. I know, yeah, and it was hilarious. And I feel like Courtney was, Courtney was getting it from all sides, from everybody, about her and Cameron's situation. But I like that Pat and Barbara, like, we are being understanding, but also Cameron may not be his father, but his grandparents are. So we need to move with a little bit of caution here, if not with Cameron, with the people around him, because that's still an issue. So I thought all of that was funny. Yeah.
Tati, would you like to share your thoughts?
Yes, I didn't realize I was muted. I also greatly enjoyed this episode, beginning with Yolanda confessing to the priest and apologizing not for what she has done, but for what she's about to do. So dramatic. Also loved the, Whitmore Dugan household bemoaning what Paula and Crusher have done to their sustenance. having come in and acting like they own the house and their diet plans, I guess. It's nice when, you know, Courtney and Cameron, like you guys already said, they have, like, cute little chemistry, so it's cute, you know, they're having those little moments, and that's all well and good. Love Jakeem and Mike getting love advice on how to woo Courtney or Sydney over to their team, and they're also like, this is not actually what we were going for, but go on, tell us more. Also, I did like Sylvester, again, being kind of like, you know, trying to be the leader of the team and telling Yolanda not to alert Cindy to the fact that she has the laptop. But then, of course, that did not work out. So the battle between Yolanda and Cindy was badass and plenty of fun before testosterone came in between them. Also enjoyed the entire Pat and Barbara visiting Cameron's grandparents situation, everyone being super awkward with each other, and the grandpa trying to make everything be super chill, the grandma ready to be like just like throwing out accusations. I don't know what her deal is. And then Courtney and like Cameron like being caught red-handed.
Not her son. That's her deal, Tati.
Listen. Her son needed to go. I don't know what to tell her. I don't know what to say. But anyway, so that whole situation was enjoyable to witness. And once again, the scene where, like, basically they break up, the JSA, like, you know, and Yolanda tells Courtney, like, oh, Sylvester was already leading the team. Like, that was so horrible, but it was really well done.
Yeah.
Like the acting was super good. I felt so bad. Britt, Breck, whatever her name is, so good. lots of pain all around, but very good on the part of the writing and the acting for all of them. And then afterwards, the talk between Sylvester and Courtney was super sweet. Glad that she still has people on her side. And when he talked about Marion Brainwave, good getting that backstory and, Feeling feels for Sylvester, which is not something that I have been doing that much earlier in the season. And then, why have I just forgotten her name? Oh my God. Dr. Midnight. Beth coming in with the security, you know, feed, and then like all acting all weird, like what are we supposed to do now, right? That was a lot of fun. And also, once again, although I know Sylvester was there too, but when something happens, they do still go to Courtney, even though just before they were like, well, fine, then I guess you're not really part of the team. Non-leader person. So yeah. There we go.
Yes, I liked all of the tension, even though it hurt me. But I feel like it was just well-written and it made a lot of sense. The fact that, you know, Courtney and Cameron's relationship wasn't something that remained secret for very long and that the team immediately found out about it was really good, because I don't like when they drag things out and, you know, then you can get to like the juicier stuff faster. And I do like the fact that, like, even though Yolanda's super judgy against Cindy right now, I feel like I understand where it's coming from in a lot of ways. She was hyper judged before, and so I feel like her reaction is to and be the same Cindy, to somebody Cindy else. And it's
the cause of her being judged.
Exactly. So she's just like, I don't like you. But also, like, she's super protective of Courtney, and so that's why she's also super judgy of Cindy. And in a lot of ways, like, no one really protected her when other people were being judgy towards her. So I feel like there's a lot going on there with her. But I did love the scene in the church when she was talking to the priest, and that whole moment. He's just like, I don't like where this is going, my child. And she's like, I've got it all figured out. It's fine. and just kind of seeing, like, how far she's come since season one. Is just really nice. Great character growth. Cindy revealing what's really happening to her, even though she was, like, outed in a way, but she came clean. She was honest about what was going on, and how it got started. And I like the ties into, like, season two. Like, we haven't forgotten what happened in the Shadowlands or anything like that. And tying that back to Cindy's current condition is really great. Sylvester growing up a bit and being more of a mentor instead of thinking about, like, what am I going to do? And, he's had his time to ponder, and now he's actually putting some stuff into action and just toning it down a notch, which I greatly appreciate. I continue to love just, like, the parenting styles of Pat and Barbara in general, and the fact that they're like, she's got a crush, but they're like, oh, it can't be Cameron, so we got to go talk to his grandparents. It was really great. Like, you can sense their protectiveness, but also wanting to be a little bit nosy and, like, see what's going on there. And it's interesting because, like, so far with the grandparents, we don't really get a lot of them interacting with anybody. It's just sort of them, like, lurking in the corners and the doors and being like, what's going on? But now we actually get to see them be more like regular people, which was nice, even though they're still really creepy. What else? Just Jakeem and Mike continuing to be the cutest and most adorable pair, trying to continue to get Cindy on their team. Which was really hilarious. what else? Just the general vibe. I feel like we're finally picking up steam with regards to, like, the mystery and where it's going. Now that we definitely know it's not Cindy, the creepy part is, Dragon King or whoever is behind this, kind of like putting the puzzle pieces together, which was really creepy this episode. And it was a nice touch. What did not spark joy?
As much as it's in my likes, it's also in my dislikes. The internal fighting of the JSA has, like, reached a fever pitch, and I hate it. Like, I hate it. I don't like my babies not getting along. I don't like the hard stances that Yolanda and Rick are taking. I think Rick just wants to be mad to be mad, to be honest. Yolanda, like,
he's got nothing else going on.
He's got nothing else going on other than being angry. But, like, there's a lot of, it makes a lot of sense where Yolanda's, like, anger comes from. But I'm just kind of thinking, I think in this episode, but more so in episode 7, the issues with her mom, I feel like those are being reflected and how she's treating Cindy. And it's, I want her to kind of, like, pull back from this. Cause I feel like the previous Wildcat, he was also kind of an asshole, right? So I don't want her to, she can inherit his suit, but not his personality. Thank you. I don't like, cause there is a moment in the bedroom where Cindy is like, look, I know this looks bad, but I need help. Someone help me. And Yolanda's like, I don't care. And nothing mattered her more than attacking Cindy and not hearing out what the reasons behind it was. I thought it was pretty brutal, not her proudest moment. And then Rick's ass just being like, I also want to beat something up. him taking off the limiter is not, we get signs of this in episode six, but it really comes out in the next episode. But just, it's not a good thing for him to not have limits on his powers. So I really didn't like the fact that both of them were teaming up against Cindy. I didn't think that was great. And then also her jab at Courtney at the end of, you know, Courtney being like, maybe I should step down, and Yolanda being like, Sylvester's already been a leader. Like, what are you talking about? way harsh, hey, like, dial it back just a little bit. It's not, that's not necessarily that far. So the, all of that is just like ugliness. And poor Beth, like she's in a room, like she can't physically get to Cindy quicker than Rick did, or, you know, anybody else. And you're calling out to Courtney, who's been MIA. Will she show up? All of that kind of like anxiety that Beth was going through. It was just like not a great situation. So I don't blame Cindy for kind of giving up on them. Maybe this means there's a chance for yes. So so that could be something fun. I am a hater. I'm a Cameron hater. I will admit it.
But like, what do you do this time?
We'll get you a t-shirt.
It wasn't necessarily him, but like when Courtney is like trying to coach him on how to use his powers, and there's this like dramatic Frozen-esque music going on around him, and you know, it was just like ridiculous. I didn't like the music choice. I thought it was too corny. So that was me. That was my hateful, my Sour Patch moment on Cameron and Courtney's relationship. Yeah.
It's my turn now, yes. Okay. Mm-hmm. So my dislikes, I mean, I don't disagree with you. The internal fighting of the JSA is very hurtful to me, and my friends all hate it, clearly. I don't like fighting. Fighting with friends is bad. Also, I don't like Courtney conveniently not telling Cameron that she is Stargirl, like, every single time she has the opportunity to. Like, there's no reason not to tell him now, other than because she feels guilty. Obviously, she feels guilty about his dad, but, like, he's not going to immediately be like, oh, you also have not even powers. She doesn't have powers, but whatever. You understand. Because
I want to interject one other dislike. Mm-hmm. The fact that Cameron's grandparents, like, what are they doing other than, like, sulking? Like, yeah. Are you going to take him over and, you know, expose her yourself? Or, like, what are y'all doing?
Yeah, are they just, like, playing chicken? Like, I don't know. Like, what do they know? Clearly, like, not enough, I guess, if they're not just blowing up the situation. So every time that Courtney does not tell Cameron, it's just one step closer to whenever the inevitable moment comes of the reveal, and then Cameron being like, you lied to me! Evil time. And I'm like, it's just so, like, the writing is just on the wall, so it's very annoying to watch them drag it out every single time. Anyway, this is when I was like, okay, Beth, you are going too far with, like, blocking your parents to protect them from you. And it was so sad when they were like, well, what about us protecting you? We are literally your parents. I'm like, girl, you have waited all this time for your parents to be involved in your life. Now they want to be, and you don't want them. They're still your parents, though. So if anyone finds out that you are Dr. Midnight, they're still going to go after your parents. It doesn't matter if you've blocked them. Like, it's going to be like, I don't speak to my parents.
They, like, you know, these are black parents. Like, if your child is like, no, I'm blocking you, I feel like there should have been, like...
Not in my house.
Not in my black house.
it's just a bit ridiculous. Like, it makes me feel bad, and I feel bad for Beth, but I'm also just like, it's just unrealistic. Like, you're not gaining anything out of this other than... Yeah, exactly. Like, you have a whole team of people there who are trying to protect each other. Like, let your parents be involved in that. Let them get protected by everybody. But anyway. Also, I was glad that Courtney got Cindy to really just, like, lay out what her involvement was with Gambler's death, what her innocence is, etc., right? But then, of course, she's immediately like, well, now that I've done that, I don't even want to be in this chase anymore. It is garbage. I'm leaving now. And I was like, what was the point? So now it's like one step too far in the drama in order to leave Courtney kind of like stranded in the nothingness, not really getting to be part of the JSA.
Yeah, I will agree about the Beth stuff just because it's sort of hypocritical because Courtney's parents are in the know and Barbara and Mike are not necessarily superheroes. They didn't grow up in this. They don't know what's really happening. But they're aware of what's going on, and they've actually been really helpful. So I feel like I just don't know why Beth doesn't want her parents. Maybe because they're like she can discuss maybe if they're like smothering her, I would understand, but like she can just tell them to tone it down a notch, but to block them completely just kind of seems ridiculous because it's like unnecessary. I agree about the grandparents too, because I feel like they have been, like I said, lurking in corners, looking through doors, being all shady and talking to each other about shit, but like they don't actually do anything. It doesn't seem like they're gonna be training their grandson, even though they already know he has powers. So I feel like they could be great big bads if the show let them, but because they have the creepy factor going on, but they don't really let them do anything beyond, you know, speaking to each other. They don't really even interact with the camera that much, so I don't know what their purpose is anymore. What else? Just the now that we have the part of the mystery where it's like not Cindy, but we think it's Dragon King. Since there's only 13 episodes in the season, I would like to know what his plans are. Like, what is the reason? What was that?
The puzzle, and it took me so long to figure out. It took me to like the next episode to figure out what the fuck this puzzle was. But it looks like it's a puzzle of Mr. Bones.
Mm-hmm. It does. Yes.
So, is it still Dragon King? How does Mr. Bones fit in? Why is he collecting puzzle pieces of him? I don't know.
Maybe they're working together, but just like the heavy breathing and all the camera stuff points to him, but there has to be some sort of connection because of the very next episode. But yes, like all the JSA tension, as much as I do think it's well written and it's really good, it does hurt my heart to see, just because everyone's sort of like lashing out instead of communicating well. Like now Courtney's out because she didn't tell the group the truth about Cameron, or, you know, about the fact that she didn't tell him about her killing Icicle, and all this stuff is going on, and everyone's just being kind of ridiculous at this point. I'm not going to say it's really a dislike, because I know the next episode's kind of like, we're sort of back to working together again, but it's just not easy to watch them fight all the time, because they're like the heart of the show, and I feel like they could be growing their relationships rather than constantly trying to, you know, break them. Do we have any feedback for episode 6?
Sonia's episode 6 feedback.
Thank you for feedback, Sonia.
She says, thank you for not doing these weekly because school is kicking my ass. So Sonia says, the scene where Rick is testing out his strength was very well done. I especially like the touch of the fact that the barbell was literally bending under the weight of the plates and he was still able to lift it. I mean, for sure, some way this whole removing the limiter to get more strength thing is totally going to backfire on him, but it was still pretty cool to see. I get that as a small town, you can recognize people's voices on their stories or whatnot, but I really wish the priest would stop using Ilana's name when she's in the confessional, like I'm pretty sure he did the last season as well, and like that doesn't that defeat the purpose of an anonymous confessional? I'm asking for forgiveness for what I'm about to do. Wow, Yolanda, way to scare the shit out of you, priest. I love that Paula and Crusher literally break into the Whitmore greenhouse to steal their unhealthy food and put in healthy food. Their food budget must be insane. Side note. Sonia says, love Courtney using Sylvester's teachings to help Cameron and then having to basically be like, my gymnastics coach back in California told me the same thing, because what other coach would I have? Not a superhero coach, that's for sure.
And that was a nice nod to the fact that she used to do gymnastics, because I feel like they don't really talk about that anymore.
Nice callback. Smart of Sylvester to say to hack the laptop, download it to Beth's computer, and then put it back so Sydney doesn't catch on, because that way they would be able to look at the evidence without needing to rush around wondering if Sydney is going to kill them or run or something. LMAO at the exchange between Pat and Barbara about the fruit, because I laughed out loud when Pat said she can keep some of this fruit because he didn't even want it when Crusher left it. Excuse me. And then when Barbara said, no, it's for them, Pat literally told her to put some of the fruit in her purse. I love how the grandpa is at least trying to be normal and the grandma is just straight up crazy, like saying Courtney is quote unquote special, as in they know she's Stargirl. Or does Barbara know what it's like to lose a child, as in she's going to murder Courtney or Mike? Let's calm down, lady. Love the exchange between Beth and Yolanda, where it's clear Beth is upset, and Yolanda asked her twice if she was okay, And then Beth opened up to her. I thought that was a really good moment because you don't really get a lot of moments between.
That's true.
EMC members of the JSA, if it's not if Courtney's not involved. So that's a good to say that they are all friends. Also, how Yolanda said she would never tell her parents about being Wildcat, but that best parents don't suck the way Yolanda's do. I hope this means later that she'll let them help because they actually have good ideas and they just need to chill out. Love the fight between Yolanda, Rick, and Sydney, and then Courtney landing and using the staff to send out a huge beam of light that ended the fight was so cool, and it reminded me of the first Avengers movie when Thor hit Cap's shield and it just blasted all of them backwards. The team seeing what Sydney is turning into was crazy, and now they're probably not going to want to help her. Even Courtney, who was on the only one on her side after Sydney outed Courtney helping Cameron with his powers to the team. Also cannot believe Sydney said, when Cameron finds out what you did to his dad and he comes after you, I hope he wins. Like, girl, calm down. Even Beth, who was on Courtney's side about everything, doesn't trust her anymore, which makes me sad, and they are my sunshine twins. Love the scene between Courtney and Sylvester where he was comforting her and telling her about his sister and how Icicle is the one who turned Brainwave evil again. I agree, that was a nice scene between them. He kind of took in over Pat's role in that scene. Also nice to get a Henry mention again and how he saved them, which I guess he was as good as his mom and uncle. Beth finding out all of the hidden camera video feeds and the episode ending with her showing Courtney and Pat the camera in the kitchen while they're in their kitchen while they are in the kitchen. Oh my God. There you go.
Beautiful. Thank you so much, Sonia. And now we are moving on to dun, 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 side B, Blackout Bomb. Episode 7 is called Infinity Inc. Part 1. After Beth makes a major discovery on the gambler's laptop, seeing all of these cameras planted everywhere around their house, in front of their house, at the gambler's trailer. So they have been watched for several months. They decide to form a plan where Beth basically blacks out Blue Valley and they have to take out the cameras before all the lights come back on and whoever's on the other side finds out. Meanwhile, Jenny returns with Todd in tow because last season we had her searching for her brother. We did not actually see her brother, and now he's introduced here with his beautiful boyfriend, Danny. They're about to have dinner together, birthday dinner together, when he is kidnapped by cops who take him to Mr. Bones, basically. And this was like 6 months ago, so tying back to when Jenny left the orphanage. And so there's a whole subplot involving the Shade and Courtney and Jenny, because her Green Lantern ring tried to shoot down one of the shadows from the Shade, and it got absorbed into the ring instead. So now it's causing a lot of chaos, and it's affecting both her and the Shade's powers. And they're also on the hunt for Todd to save him from Mr. Bones. And there's just a lot of chaos in this episode. What sparked Joy?
Well, I like to see chaos, but I definitely liked getting to check in on Jenny and continue that thread from last year that people were really excited about. It was really nice to meet Todd. I thought he and Danny were super cute. And I'm very, excited to see, how that character gets to grow, or how much more we get of Jenny and Todd, and whether we can incorporate them into the main plot and into the JSA, etc. Also thought that when they're trying to act normal at the beginning of the episode, it was super funny. Like, Pat and Mike were really bad at acting normal, and then he was like, look at Barbara and Courtney know what they're doing. So that whole scene in family dynamic was really cute. And Sylvester's running commentary of it as well. Also, love that even though Beth had sided with Rick and Yolanda in the previous episode, she still is defending Courtney and saying that they are going too far, because they are. And of course, speaking of side dynamics, Shade and Jenny together, hilarious. Loved their entire predicament and getting to meet Mr. Bones. It's fun to branch out into the other aspects and storylines that we have held off on up until now. So hopefully we're going to see them be incorporated more and more often and in more and more interesting ways. Also, we got Beth and Rick getting some alone time, finally.
It's not quality, though.
It's not really quality alone time, but, at least they were in a scene together, talking to each other. Also, speaking of people going to Courtney when they need something, I knew that as soon as Yolanda's mom was being a huge-ass bitch, Yolanda would go to Courtney Even though Courtney like was not there in that moment, but still, that's where she goes to stay because besties, yay. Also liked Pat protecting Courtney, and you know, now the ending, what does this mean? He and Shade are trapped in little Shadowland thing, more black and white for me. Love it. Art.
yeah. I also liked the, because this is like the second kind of flashback opening that we've gotten this season, the first one being Cindy at the Gambler's trailer, which is super recent, and this one going back a little bit further, which I wish they had. I mean, I guess there was not a lot of space to do that in season two, but I'm, you know, it took a while, but I'm glad we're back to Jenny. And there's a nice little refresher in that opening scene of where we left off with her. And I like that it was showing simultaneously, while we see her first experience with the ring, we see her brother and his first experience with the ring. I thought like him and Danny, I agree, they were really cute, and that he was trying to make this like a little romantic birthday dinner and breaking into a restaurant kind of thing. Really cute. And that he was not immediately freaked out and scared when Todd went all like light powers and dark shadows everywhere. And he's just like, are you okay? Like, I feel like the natural instinct would be the flight response where you run. But Danny is a real one, because he was like, you know, I can stay. And Todd was like, no, you need to go. So that was cool. And it was nice to have that in the beginning. It was like, where does this fit in with the new dynamic? And we kind of see that with, one, the puzzle becoming more clear, the connection to Mr. Bones. And it was also really cool to see Mr. Bones. I like that we got this extended scene of not just Todd's powers, but then also like how he gets to that Loki insane asylum place with that lady, and the introduction of Mr. Bones. All of that is pretty cool. And for people that are familiar with the comics, it is a cooler reveal. And what's going on with Todd is cooler. If you're a general person and you're like, what is going on? Who is this person? It's also exciting in that, because it's like a mysterious like new character being unlocked. So that was fun. I agree. I love Return of Shade, just period. This is also like pulling up a thread that we left off earlier in the season when he left, and we know something was wrong with his powers, but not what. And so now him coming back into the story, the fact that he's so exasperated with, and the person he's exasperated with is Jenny, and that being how we reintroduced to her in the present time, I thought was really funny. And Pat trying to be like, okay, I'm trying to mediate the situation. You're peanut butter and you're chocolate. And I'm like, it's giving peanut butter jelly to me. You know, I don't know. But I thought their whole dynamic was really funny. And the fact that, and Courtney, again, like when she's forced to be in this like leadership position, she's really good at it. And talking to Jenny and kind of figuring out what it is that Jenny actually wants. Because you have these two people at an impasse. Neither one wants to help each other. And so Courtney finds a common denominator of how everybody can get what they want. And so she's really good at doing that. And I like that Shade was like, you know, I'm not going to be happy about it. I'm going to help, but I'm just not going to be happy about it. Like, I will complain the whole time. So that dynamic, I think, was really fun, and added something, a little bit of levity compared to the previous episode, how intense that was. Let's see. I also like that Operation Blackout Bomb is Beth's plan and that she's running point, because she and Sylvester are kind of the only ones that aren't really being monitored at this point. So I agree, like the family breakfast was super hilarious, and then trying to figure out how to talk normally as a family because they have not done that for a while now that Courtney's been Stargirl. So that was kind of funny to kind of see, you know, how do we do this again? But Beth being the kind of like key point to this mission being a success, her shutting down the grid, them all being in separate corners trying to find out where these cameras are, and that leading them into different things like the Yolanda and the tension with her mom reaching a fever pitch, leading her to be kicked out and have to move in with Courtney. There's something else I was going to say. It left me. Oh, Mike, not Mike, because Mike was with the Dugans. But Jakeem and Zeke and Rick were also like a little team playing like Scrabble or the word pop game, whatever. But I liked Zeke's stories. I think he is usually, you know, you don't really think much about Zeke. He's just kind of there for comic relief. But I really enjoyed his story and how he kind of like tied it in with like not spying on people, that his grandma was a Dungeons and Dragons master.
Hilarious.
It was funny. And his that kind of leading into his talk with Jakeem, which I really thought he gave super great advice. And he's like a great mentor figure for Jakeem, because this whole time Mike has been kind of like leading Jakeem around, probably like using Thunderbolt by proxy almost. And Jakeem has just been kind of like very unsure about everything. And I thought Zeke gave really good advice that maybe you're focusing too much on the specificity of the wish and not the emotion or intent behind the wish. There's a little bit more of artistic flair. Maybe you're not getting what you want from Thunderbolt because he doesn't feel the intent behind it, which I thought was great advice. And hopefully that leads to a confidence booster for Jakeem and being able to get wishes that actually land now with Thunderbolt and increasing his power abilities. And I think that's all I will say for now. Yeah.
Yes, I too liked Zeke and Jakeem. It also gave us a little bit more Jakeem in general. He's very much like, I feel like they've made him Mike's sidekick at this point. But now he gets his like own little mentor. And I just like the themes of having people be, you know, youth mentors at this point. Because it's like everyone sort of has one. They have these nice chats. It's really nice and lovely. I really like how they tie Jenny back, because for a while I was like, are we just not going to pick her story back up? But they picked her story back up and they brought Todd with her, which was really nice. And I like that they tied it back to like when Jenny left the orphanage and how that her touching the ring kind of manifested both of their powers at the same time. And Mr. Bones was super creepy. And it was like one of those moments where I'm like, okay, so it's not maybe just Dragon King. We've got another, you know, villain here, which is really nice to see. And the whole Jenny Shade connection, I love the Shade too. Love her dig at him not being able to make tea, or how easy it is. Or he's like, it's much harder than you think. Because, you know, he's very particular about his tea. So seeing him was great. He's always just a fun character. And I like that he's just so annoyed with her. And that I thought when he was complaining, it was going to be like Cindy or even like somebody else that he just happened across. But it was just actually Jenny. And I'm like, this girl.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
So I thought that was great. And I love them all working together and kind of like having this side plot to hopefully tie back into like everything else later on. I did love the blackout plan. I thought that was very well thought out by Beth in general, and like seeing how everyone was sort of pitching in or even reacting to like the pretending to have dinner. And I'm thinking, like, if Dragon King is watching you, I mean, he is watching them, but like, why would you think that this behavior was going to be like natural or normal? And, like, you wouldn't think something's wrong, right? But that was hilarious, because it's like, it was sort of like watching a reality show. It's like, I don't know what to do, so just pretend. And like Sylvester trying to give them advice over the comms about how to act. He's like, see, like Courtney and doing it a lot better. So all of that was just great. It was just nice to see like everybody sort of interacting. You got like different dynamics throughout the episode, which we've been hoping for in the last two. And even like seeing Yolanda, I mean, this is not a joy, but like having Yolanda not talking to Courtney, but then having to be at her house later, like what the future will hold for them, maybe reconciling. And just like the sinister feel of for this episode in general, because of Mr. Bones's involvement and what was happening to Todd, was all really great. And I hope that like it all ties together well moving forward. What did not spark joy?
Well, you know, just bad things happening to Todd. I was very, even though like as soon as, obviously something bad was gonna happen to them as soon as I saw them, but I was like, oh no, I want to see them be cute for longer. So, you know, sad times. Also, Yolanda's mom. I just hate her so much. I just, you know, if I never saw her again, it would be too soon. She sucks, and I don't like that. I wish that Yolanda had a better family. I don't really have anything else that I didn't like, because I thought it was a pretty good episode. I like that it moved the plot forward. It brought back other characters, and like you said, introduced new dynamics and explored dynamics that we very rarely get to see. So yeah, I'm excited for Infinity Inc. Part 2.
Yeah, I liked the introduction to Todd, but I'm also worried for Todd about what, because I don't have any background on Obsidian and his powers, and if he's like a tortured soul or if there is like a control of it and then, you know, he gets stronger. So I don't know which way it's supposed to go at this point. So it just feels very bleak for him right now. So that doesn't bring me joy. But I think more as happy as I was to get pick up on this thread of Jenny and Todd and the Return of the Shade, I'm like, this is a side plot pivot that we don't necessarily have time for at the minute because we left a dire situation with, you know, the camera hunt. Shade comes in and kidnaps Courtney and Pat goes along. So now no one knows, like, there was no time to tell everybody where they were going. And now Courtney, who has been somewhat removed from her team because of the issues they were having and her stepping back, now she's removed even more at a more crucial point for her team where they have a chance to come back together because there's bigger problems, aka Dragon King or whoever is looking at them through these cameras. That would have been like a opportunity for them to have a successful mission and maybe come back together to find some common ground, but they can't even do that because Courtney's gone and no one knows where she is, so no one knows why she left. And that just kind of, you know, it's another kind of Courtney's unreliable, seemingly unreliable to the team. So that doesn't make me happy. Yolanda, like when her mom called the cafe, the diner, and was like, you told me you were working late shifts, but your boss just said this is the first late shift you've had. I knew it was going downhill from there. All the
accusations. Why did her boss write her out like that?
I don't know. Like, well, I guess the boss doesn't know to have a cover story. But Yolanda did cover for it pretty quickly. Like, this is a miscommunication. I will tell you when I get home. But I was really especially nervous when Yolanda was back at her house looking for cameras and talking to Sylvester on the little intercom. And she says Sylvester, and her mom comes in right after. So I was thinking that her mom maybe heard Sylvester is like, you're with boys and da 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 again. So I was already like on edge for that. But even I don't even think that that came up, but it was still a very accusatory and not great kind of situation. And I hate that for her that she's even you know, though she's kind of like spiraling down this kind of dark path on her own. She doesn't really have like a happy refuge in her house. So it was really sad. I like that she stood up to her mom, like, look, we need boundaries. If I'm saying I'm not doing something, I'm not doing something. And that's just what it is. But as soon as she said that, I'm like, good for you, girl. But that's just not going to work out the way that you want it to. And it did not work out the way that she probably would have wanted to. So that's really sad for her. And her not really having Courtney or them being in the best of terms right now makes it even more difficult. So I felt sad for her. Rick in this freaking Hourman on steroids kick. We got Hour Knight, but I almost didn't want it. I felt very nervous for Beth because it's to the point, and I don't want to make like light of it or say like this is what happened, but his anger is super uncontrollable to the point that I feel like if not Beth, one of his friends is going to be hurt by him accidentally. I feel like that's if there's anything that's going to get him to cut back or realize what the limiter or not having it is doing to him, it's going to come at the expense of somebody on that team. That does not spark joy. I hope that is not what happens, but it just feels like it's building towards something pretty drastic. And I don't like that.
Yeah, I don't like it either. It was pretty scary, actually, to see him that way. And
yeah,
it's like, why do you think your dad had the limiter, dumbass? Like, of course.
Talking about people who can't control their rage.
I forgot to say before I go on with my no joys is that I did like the Shade actually saying, like, he doesn't need Stargirl with the staff. He needed Courtney Whitmore. And I was like, that's so nice because, you know, the whole staff conundrum this season has been a thing, and her feeling like she's not really valuable as just Courtney.
Yeah, I feel like I agree with that because it's like, it's not just the staff that makes her Stargirl. It is her.
Exactly. So that was really nice. But back to my dislikes. I sort of agree with the subplot, like, just being a little bit abrupt. It felt like we could have gotten just a little bit of padding before they threw Jenny and Todd back into the storyline. But I, you know, they tied it in together, so it mostly was fine. I did find it really hard, like, to see Yolanda really still struggling with her mom, just because I feel like her mom is, like, the most stubborn person in the world. There's absolutely no changing her mind. You can't talk to her. And I feel like everything that happened last year in season one with Yolanda and all the, like, the way that she was treated in general, like, there was no sympathy from her family. And I don't know why I still expect sympathy from her family. So it was just really frustrating to see how much her mom just doesn't trust her, doesn't believe in her, doesn't, you know, isn't really there for her other than to, like, yell at her and make her feel kind of small. And that really pisses me off.
There's also no, like, upside. Like, this is not another Beth and her parent situation where a simple conversation could fix it. Like, it doesn't feel like there's anything that could fix this.
Yeah, it's a lot. Yeah. And I'm so, it just makes me really, really sad for Yolanda because I feel like she's just, there's a lot going on with her. And it's just, like, this doesn't really help her sort through her feelings. And I feel like she hasn't really been able to open up to anybody this season about, like, all of that stuff. So hopefully she will get the chance to. I think that's it, because I feel like this was a pretty strong episode. It was, like, a nice way to bring everything together and sort of, like, throw us into the second half of the season. So what did Sonia think about this seventh episode?
She says, yay, nice to have Jenny back, as it seemed like they were just dropped her storyline. I thought that lady was being nice when she was telling Jenny to try not to be so hard. Jenny to not try so hard to be perfect for people to like her, but then she ended her sentence saying that it was annoying. Danny getting Todd a plane ticket so that he could find his sister is so nice. Also, what happened with Todd's powers? I'm assuming it has to do with the fact that Jenny has the ring and Todd doesn't. I think they're connected because in the flashbacks, they're like Wonder Twins. Like, their powers activate when they touch. So I feel like it has something to do with that. The scary skeleton man reminds me of Red Skull from Captain America. I think he's supposed to be Dr. Bones or something like that. Mr. Bones. Them acting during the dinner scene, Pat and Mike being so obvious with the Michael and father. And Barbara and Courtney being a lot better. Sylvester's commentary was hilarious. Rick, Jakeem, and Zeke playing Perfection. That was the name of that game. Was so funny as well. And Sylvester wondering if they actually do that. Yolanda's mom finding out that she was lying about working late at the diner. Ugh, can her family just stop? Beth being unsure if she would ever have found the cameras if the gambler didn't. And Sylvester reassuring her was nice. Beth and Rick are investigating together. My Hour Night crumbs. Those crumbs are sour. That was a sour
Beth. I know, they really are.
Also, Beth being worried about Rick's erratic behavior is more than just the crumbs of them standing next to each other. And I really hope that she'll be able to help him with this whole limiter thing. And it'll be a slow burn relationship. If there's some sort of nonsense going on in Blue Valley, I no longer care. I love the Shade, except when he's totally just kidnapped Courtney and Pat. What the fuck? Shade and Jenny just bickering back and forth. It's literally the best. Like, her throwing jabs at how he couldn't even make brewing tea simple. It's also good that we got an explanation on that piece of Eclipso going into Jenny's ring from last season. It's nice to showcase how Courtney overcame Eclipso by remembering her family and friends. So Courtney realizes that Jenny needs to save Todd to exercise Eclipso from the ring so then Shade has to begrudgingly help. Love Yolanda sitting up to her mom, but sad that it ended with Yolanda's mom kicking her out. Well, shit, if Rick didn't spend a million years breaking everything in their school for no reason, they could have gotten at least all the cameras in the school before the power went back on.
Rick is so useless.
I know. And, like, that is obvious damage. Like, they're going to notice that at the school tomorrow, Rick. Like, what are you doing? Then she says, what the heck are Todd's powers? I thought they were both Green Lanterns, but I guess not. And I guess we'll find out next episode. Pat jumping in front of Courtney to protect her and somehow getting him and Shade blasted into the past. Can't wait for the episode. And she does have, since we're going to, like, lean into predictions, her prediction is, I think that this Helix Institute place is the institution where Cameron was that Cindy mentioned, as it is called, the Helix Institute for Troubled Kids, and she said it was an institute for angry boys.
Oh, good catch, Sonia. That's a good one.
That is a good, that's better than anything I probably would have thought of.
Speaking of predictions, do y'all have any?
No.
Can't follow up with
surprise.
Can't follow up Sonia with that. Like,
exactly.
That
was Sonia beat us.
I can't follow up that one for sure.
All right. Well, do we have a lady with gumption for the last three episodes?
Well, I feel like Cindy was doing pretty well for herself. Yolanda had a lot of gumption in episode 6.
Yes.
Courtney has not been very gumptioning recently, so.
I would say this was like Yolanda's arc.
Yeah. Yes.
She stood up to, you know, Cindy, even though it was not with the best of intentions.
Well, it's not like she stood up to Cindy.
Right.
She was determined that
she was a driver
in
that plot.
And she succeeded in finding out the truth.
And she drove with her mom.
Mm-hmm. And with her mom. Yeah.
Yeah.
And she was making decisions left and right. So.
Yes. Yeah.
All right. Well, congratulations to Yolanda, who is our Lady with Gumption of the Week for episodes 5 through 7. Tune in next time where we will recap the rest of maybe 3 or 4 episodes of Stargirl. And we are also going to do another Patreon episode very soon, probably Harley Quinn. I will also promise to watch Paper Girls for those who are asking, because I'm very behind, but I promise to do my due diligence. You can reach us at ladieswgumption.tumblr.com, at ladieswgumption@gmail.com, and until next time, fare thee well, everybody.
Bye. Bye.